Damien, how are you doing, man?
Very good, thanks, Charles.
So what's going on?
Well, just before we kick off, my name's Damien Watkins. I'm a program manager on the Visual C++ team. I work on the front end and the libraries. So on the front end, as we've mentioned before, you can think of new keywords for the language. And on the library side, you can think of things like CRT, MFC, ATL, and other areas like that.
Absolutely.
And next to me is another Damien.
Hi. My name is Damien Haas. I'm a security development manager. And one of my roles is to make sure that the security updates that we ship on a monthly basis, they're actually secure. They're rock solid. So when we ship them once, our customers actually stay protected. And that's the goal of my team.
Excellent.
And I'm Jonathan Ness. I'm a security development lead. I'm also on Damien's team, the Microsoft Security Response Center, the engineering team. And I guess I'll get started with why we're here today. So this morning we released two security bulletins out of band. As you guys know, it's pretty rare to release security bulletins out of band. We normally release on the second Tuesday of every month. But today is the fourth Tuesday, and we have two bulletins that are going out. Now, this is an issue in ATL. And the reason we're filming this video, actually, is because it's really a call to action to developers on this one. There's two security bulletins, one in IE, one for Visual Studio, but we're talking today about the Visual Studio one. We had reports in the last few weeks of exploits against one specific COM object, and we've addressed that with MS-09-032, the security bulletin we released 2 weeks ago. But we've shown... we've seen really this as a wider problem, and we need to get the word out to all developers that they need to take a look at their COM objects they ship, make sure that if they are vulnerable, we need to have them rebuild. So we're just going to kind of go into how to know if your control is vulnerable and how we can fix it. Now, we have been working with some third parties the last few weeks, so some developers are kind of taken care of, but it's a big ecosystem now that we need to get the word out to, and that's what we want to go into today. So
so now Damien mentioned the other Damien. the C++ Damien.
That's me.
Right? Yeah. And then we have the security Damien. All right. Had mentioned ATL.
Yes.
So these are COM objects that were created using that library.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's really COM objects created using ATL that take untrusted data. And if they're instantiated from a stream of untrusted data, they can hit a vulnerable code path. And I guess let's pull up the flowchart so we can show people how to know whether malicious code can get to the bad component.
Okay, let me zoom in on this guy.
Sure. So basically, the idea of this flowchart, and actually you'll be able to see this on a KV article, so don't worry about it if there's a specific detail here that you cannot see well. So let's say you actually have a COM component, and you actually want to understand whether you may actually be vulnerable. You have to take control to go and rebuild your specific bits. Mm-hmm. So if it's not a COM component, then basically we're going to go down here, and then you're going to go check. Well, am I calling read from stream? If the answer is yes, you're calling read from stream, then basically you want to know, is there any untrusted data passed in into this call? And if the answer is yes, then you're likely affected to the issue. Now, on the other hand, if there's no untrusted data that can actually be passed to this API, then you're safe. So that's the end of that one. Now, in this specific... there it goes. I can erase right now, so you're going to leave it the way it is. So now let's say if it's a COM component, then you want to know, is it marked as safe for scripting? So if it's marked as safe for scripting...
Actually, Damien, it's safe for initialization, right?
Sorry,
yeah,
my mistake.
Safe
for initialization.
Yeah. Which means, for most people, like in the IE case, would be you're not prompted by IE.
Well, what it means is, so there's two different things. Since I talk about safe for scripting, in reality, this specific instance is safe for initialization. The idea is whether the COM component can actually be initialized.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you can script, but it just means whether the component can actually be initialized.
Right. Sure.
So does it provide the necessary functionality so somebody can go and instantiate this this component?
Yeah.
So if it can be instantiated, then does it inherit from iperset stream init. If that's the case, okay, then, and this go over here, then there's two macros that it can be using, which are actually vulnerable. Is the prop entry macro or the prop entry ex macro. So if that has been used, then you're likely affected. If those macros are not being used, then are they using the prop entry type or the prop entry type ex macro? And that is actually fairly easy to do. What you have to do is look into your source code and go and understand, just do a search and understand whether, hey, am I using this or not? It's very simple to do. Now, if the answer is yes on this one, are you using any of these variant types? If the answer is yes, then you're likely affected. And if the answer is no to all this, we're going back to the old code path that we were here, whether you're calling to the read from string function. And then once again, that's similar to the code path that I explained earlier, whether you're actually using untrusted data. And if you're using untrusted data, you're likely to be vulnerable. Now, the last code path that I want to go over is if you inherit from iPersist StreamInit, okay, if you don't inherit from iPersist StreamInit, then are you calling ATL persist StreamInit load? If you're calling that one, then once again, you have to go look through the macros that I have talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. So going through basically this code path again. And if you are not, then once again, you need to go and check whether you're going through the read from stream code path that I touched on. So this is a diagram that is actually makes it hopefully fairly easy for developers to go and understand whether their components may actually be vulnerable. Excellent. So that's kind of what I wanted just to cover.
So there's a lot of stuff here. What do you think is the most likely scenario that the developer should care about?
Like, so the reality is there on the ATL specific side, we ended up adding actually protections. We ended up changing, and I'm actually now talking on behalf of Damien.
The other Damien.
So the reality is, and probably you can touch on this, what we actually ended up doing to make it stronger. Some of these changes had actually already happened on the latest version of Visual Studio.
Sure.
That's good, but that's kind of some of the pieces that we were doing already to make the code more secure. So things for people to understand. Now, if you look at the read from stream piece here, this is just the basics. Am I taking untrusted data?
Right.
And if you're taking untrusted data, you better actually do the proper validation. That's just from a security perspective. That is something that we always have to do when you go and actually call APIs. So from my perspective, this will be the key pieces, and I'm probably going to let Damien now talk about this in more in more detail.
Okay, great.
Thanks. So I guess just a couple of things to clarify. Damien just mentioned that we'd been doing some security work, and these are fixed in the latest version of Visual Studio. By that, he means Visual Studio 2010 Beta 1. So if you're currently using a shipped product, so that's Visual Studio 2008 or 2005 or 2003, then you do have to walk through that flow chart and see if you're at all vulnerable. So I just wanted to call that out. Don't think latest version meant latest supported shipped version or anything. Okay, it's just the beta for 2010 that has all the new stuff in by default. And then maybe if we can just pop back 1 second here.
Sure.
As you'll see, there are a few macros that get mentioned here in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing, if I take a customer scenario, what should I do? I should install the Visual Studio update that's going to be offered to me, well, today when I believe we're going to start airing this video.
Yep.
Of course, we're doing it a little in advance, so we have some assistance and help ready for the developers when we hit the ground.
Absolutely.
On day one. We've deprecated these. So if you, we've deprecated the macros that lead to the errors. So if you just rebuild your code, you'll get deprecated warnings if you're using the wrong macros. So that's one way that we've tried to make it a lot easier for you. There is, of course, a switch to turn the macro warnings off. Please don't use that. Make sure it's turned on. And then go through, and we'll point out all of these macros and say you should use the new types. Mm-hmm. Now, I won't, because there's a large number, I won't go into the very specific details. But essentially, what was going on with these macros was that you were saying, I've got a property, and it's of a particular type. And you could be using a very generic kind of type here. So, for example, you could be saying iDispatch. The type of this object is iDispatch, which is in some ways very useful, but in other ways it's not. It's not specific enough. Okay. Almost, well, most COM controls can support iDispatch. Mm-hmm. So what we've done to these macros is generally added another parameter, which is some form of type information. And what we're doing is, as we're instantiating these, we're checking and seeing, well, did we get the right type back? In the case of interfaces, you can supply a list of class IDs, and so therefore we will check later on and say, oh, I did say that it was of type iDispatch, but the only classes I want are this set of classes here. Did I get one of those set of classes? Or another version has a function pointer. And so therefore, you can instantiate it, and then you can call to this function and say, did I get back a type that I expected? And so rather than having hard-coded at, say, compile time, a list of class IDs, you can have some way of dynamically sorting it out at runtime. Mm-hmm. So I probably won't go into a lot more detail about it, but it's really all to do with, you know, getting a little bit better on our type checking. Which is, as you often hear when we talk about security issues, how often do we say, if you don't know exactly the type you're going to deal with, then you've got a potential problem and you need to go and look at it. And so, you know, we've essentially, by doing these things, made you write a bit more code. Unfortunately, we can't automatically fix this for you. I should call that out. Just getting the new Visual Studio update and recompiling your code is not necessarily enough. You may have to go in, you may have to put in new macros, for example, you may have to recompile. The other couple of things I'd like to just quickly call out is you can include the ATL as a kind of header-only implementation, in which case all of the code gets embedded into your executable, which is easier to deploy. You can also use the ATLXX.dll that's relevant for the piece that you're using here. If you, with your component, have shipped that ATLXX.dll, then the update includes new versions of those. You need to make sure that you ship them with your product. If you put them in the well-known place, wherever that might be, like Windows Fusion Directory, then we'll be updating those. So if you get a new VC redis, they will be automatically fixed when people go and install that. If, however, you do use something like the ATLXX.dll and you ship it app local, that is next to your executable, then you're going to be responsible for getting the new one of those next to your executables on the disk. Okay, so when you do your update and you recompile, you may have to ship that as well. Now, at this stage, everybody's looking at me and I'm sure they're all thinking, wow, Damien's gone through this great flowchart. The other Damien's talking about how do I ship and deploy this thing. Yeah. And it might be getting a bit overwhelming. It's a bit overwhelming for me. So I do want to point out that Tony Goodhue's done a fantastic landing page for this. We're in the middle of writing up a VC blog entry for this. I believe Michael Howard, some of the SDL guys.
Yeah, I can talk about that. So there's going to be a lot of documentation around this. So we actually, to try to help the different audiences to understand the issue and what the impact is, we're going to be releasing a lot of the guidance. So for developers in particular, there's going to be an awesome KV article that actually describes this diagram in a lot more detail. Mm-hmm. So highly encourage to go there. We're actually going to give you the URLs at the end of the recording so you can actually see that. Now, from a security point of view, we're going to have several blogs at the Security Research and Defense that goes and explains in more detail from a security point of view, okay, how am I at risk? What can I do about it? So you can actually understand that a lot better. Now, from an MSRC point of view, there's also going to be a blog that talks about what the issue is and what actually are we doing about it. Not only that, there's going to be another blog that actually explains from an SDL perspective, written by Michael Howard, how actually are we using this information to learn from it, and what are the next steps that we're taking in the right direction? So there's going to be a lot of information out there. There is actually one blog that hopefully will capture all these different resources, so you can easily go to that blog. It's in the Security Research and Defense, and be able to go and point to all this useful information.
Excellent. So one question, I mean, besides the fact that it's a really hard problem since we're dealing with, you know, native code and binary information, let me ask you this question, though. I mean, from your flow chart, it seems like we could build some form of static analysis tool that I could just run over my sources that would automatically find the problems, tell me exactly where they are, and then somehow perhaps even mitigate it, but we're not there yet, right? This isn't an MSR project. So static analysis tools is my question.
Yeah, static analysis tools, you know, we always need to be working harder and harder on getting those better and better. And we've already alluded to the fact that because of this, this kind of issue, we're actually looking at doing some more fuzz testing, figuring out how we can better get fuzz testing to work on these things. Internally, of course, we're now going over some fairly large code reviews and looking again at these libraries. We spend a lot of time looking at these libraries, of course, but nobody's perfect. Occasionally something slips through. We do have the issue, both the good and the bad side, of when you're on the VC team, you know, our libraries build everybody else's libraries. So it's a little bit more expensive when we find something we need to go and address.
Yeah, and just to build on top of it, what we do when situations like this arise is to go and learn. I mean, it's like, wow, so we are into this situation. What can we go and what's the lesson that we're going to get out of it? And then how we're going to go and apply that to all the new versions of our products that we're going to go release to keep raising the bar from a security point of view. And that basically is key. I'm taking advantage of some of the information that Michael is going to be talking about in his blog, but it's true. The main idea is, this is where we started. Okay, now we have raised the bar this far, and now we're going to raise it even more. And it's just keep going. It's an ongoing process, and we're going to keep learning and being able to get that back, apply it into the SDL, so every other product at Microsoft can benefit from it. And that is key. It's just our fuzzing tools, they keep getting better. Our education, our training for developers also keeps getting better. So it's not just one thing that we go do. It's just different pieces that we go do put together just to provide a better offering so our products keep getting better from a security point of view.
Excellent. And now for ATL case, that's Ali's team, right? Ali,
yep.
Contente.
That's right. Ali is my dev lead. I'm the program manager that owns that area, and Maya is our QA lead. So we've had a lot of long nights recently, worked a few weekends and that on these issues, as many other people around the company have. Yeah. And that actually leads to something that I did want to mention. It's been very interesting for me. The Security Response Center is a part of the company that I don't spend a lot of time interacting with, I guess, until you really, really, really need them. And so it's been fantastic, the guys that are here with me now, but also, so many people I've met over the last, few weeks who have been dealing with this issue, getting a whole lot of things in place that I couldn't deal with. I mean, all these blogs are just going to appear. The Channel 9 video is just going to appear. It's all going to appear on the one day. Mm-hmm. And it's been a very interesting eye-opener for me to see how it all works. Other issues, tiny ones like Moo and Woo, the Microsoft update and the Windows update. I was talking with Ali yesterday, and we were saying, imagine how hard this would be if we had to burn this update onto a CD or a DVD like we were doing a decade ago and actually get it out to all the Visual Studio developers across the world. Whereas nowadays, because of that wonderful technology, most people are just going to start getting it tomorrow. It probably tells us what day we're filming the video. But,
gave it away.
Yeah, I gave it away after all. But they're just
Which
all
is
going
fine.
To start getting it, yeah. And, so to me, you talk about how much you learn.
Yeah.
I'm learning an incredible amount about the infrastructure and the process for, how we look at and deal with it.
So let's talk about that. Learning is a really interesting thing. How did you guys find out about this? And when did you get Damien involved? Like, how does it work?
So basically, this is part of the Microsoft Security Response Center process. The idea, the way it works, somebody externally actually finds a vulnerability. They responsibly disclose, hopefully, the vulnerability to us. That's what we try to encourage people to do. They report that to us, and then our team basically starts working on it to try to understand the issue, assess the severity of the issue, and at the same time, we start working with the product team because they are the experts on how the specific application works, while we are the ones that are the experts in security.
Sure.
And then on top of that, there is the Microsoft Security Response Center's, the program managers that actually make sure that the process keeps working. They are the ones that works with the finders. So once vulnerabilities get reported, it comes in, an MSRC case will get open. Automatically, the product team, as well as us, get involved, start looking into it. We understand how bad it is, put a severity into it, assess what's the likelihood of exploitation it's going to be. Once we have done all that work, we start looking for other similar bugs, what we call hacking for variations. We go and start poking the code around, left and right, trying to understand, hey, if there's a vulnerability here, likelihood there's going to be other vulnerabilities within that code is high. So let's go and actually identify those as well. So when we ship an update, it's secure. On top of that, we also are the ones that provide the mitigations and workarounds. That is actually Jonathan's teams. The information that goes into the bulletins, the mitigation workarounds, that is actually built from a technical team. It's a team that actually does a lot of security there. Now, on top of that, if this is at this point a year and a half ago, we decided to start blogging. The Security Research and Defense blog was, we had a lot of information that we wanted basically to share with our customers, but it wasn't necessarily applicable for the bulletin by the fact that it might not actually apply to all the customers, which is the target of the bulletin. So that's why we actually start blogging, being able to provide more technical details for IT pros, for security researchers, so they can actually go understand that and help the ecosystem stay secure. So putting all those pieces together, once the product teams can actually build the appropriate updates, we understand the risk of the situation and whatnot, then eventually we go and ship the security updates. On top of that, there is the security bulletins that get reviewed from a technical point of view as well, that it actually has the proper information in them, so customers can benefit from it. And then the update goes live normally on second Tuesday. This is the exception because we're going out of band, but normally on second Tuesday. And that's
kind
of our process.
Let me ask you a question about that, because I've been reading stuff. I mean, actually a Niner, and I, you know, which one was it? Was it... oh, man, I'm embarrassed that I couldn't remember the one that actually posted this, but it's really kind of a good question. He knew that there was actually going to be a Blowdart, that's the Niner's name, basically knew that there was going to be an out-of-band release. All the media knows it now. Well, and so he started hypothesizing, but what's wrong with an out-of-band release? It means you need to get it out to the market faster. Big deal.
So,
there's many answers to that. I guess the reason people started seeing it was on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock. We did the advance notification. It's important for us to remember that there's customers on the end. And customers come in various shapes and forms, but they can be IT managers at very large corporations, and they just can't randomly have random updates appear at their doorstep and then be saying, well, do I need to put this, you know, throughout my whole company? Do I need to take machines down if you need to reboot servers and things like that? So a couple of things. By training them that it's the second Tuesday of every month, they can get very methodical. They know what's coming from Microsoft. We send out a 3-day advance notification. It gives them time to plan. So the main reason for wanting to be regular is to help our customers understand when the changes are coming.
Certainly.
In this particular case, for various reasons, it's considered a bit more urgent than we want to wait until the following Patch Tuesday, as we call it.
Yeah, just to build on top of that, on this specific instance, on MSO9032, the MS Bit Control vulnerability was actually taking advantage, and it was being exploited in the wild. So that's why we ship an update to, we killbit it, that specific control. Now, the update that we're doing now, we believe that the risk is fairly high, especially with Black Hat DEF CON, that are two security conferences that are happening this week. So we believe the risk is high, and that's part of the reasons why actually we're going out of band to keep our customers protected. Now, just to build on top of what Damian was saying earlier, when we actually have talked to our customers, we have heard again and again the fact that they love predictability. They want to be able to staff people so they can actually go and apply the updates and take action when needed. Mm-hmm. So that's why we move into a regular shipping schedule, which is the security update on Tuesday, the second Tuesday of every month. And that's why the out-of-bands are rare, just because from our customer's perspective, mm-hmm. it adds an extra burden to them because they have to staff people and whatnot, and we and they don't like to do that.
So understood. But in this case, it makes sense.
In this case, correct, due to the risk and due to the security conference out there and the fact that there was one issue being exploited, yes, it does make sense.
Wow, so you guys have a hard job, man. So you actually are one of the guys that goes in and actually tries to prove that the exploit's a real exploit and then figure out how to get around it. So in this case, I mean, we're talking about developers are going to have to recompile their applications and
right.
redeploy them, as Damian, the other Damian, had already said.
Right.
So that's, you know, there's a time kind of variable there. What about for the, you know, the average user to just, is there a way to just not initialize COM objects at all? Without a prompt or something? I'm thinking about the other end. But we don't have to get into that. That's fine. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, one thing for prompting, since you brought it up, that's, in my opinion, throwing a prompt to the user, making the user rely on making a security decision, especially not the majority of the users, we shouldn't be necessarily be doing that. That doesn't actually necessarily help.
Sure.
So I will highly discourage people throwing a prompt to instantiate a control instead of actually doing the checks. In fact, if you're thinking of adding a prompt, I'll highly encourage you just to go check the code. It's fairly easy to do and do the proper security fixes and don't have to actually worry about.
And so just one quick question. So for untrusted data, like Michael Howard's famous for the don't trust anything, right? Why would you just take data and assume that the person isn't really trying to do something bad?
Sure.
But in the case of this kind of data, how do developers actually know? I mean, because you're dealing with at the lowest levels, right? I mean, it's hard to know what the type is.
Sure.
So
if you look at the read from stream, there's two pieces. One of them, if you're passing parameters that you know where they're coming from, sometimes you might, depend on the specific control, sometimes you might, then it will be easy to go and flesh
Certainly.
It out.
Certainly.
Yeah. Now, if you are in doubt, then basically the action that you have, and that's going to be spelled out on the KB article, what can you do around that when you have a doubt? In my opinion, if you have a doubt, you may as well be safe than sorry. So
absolutely.
And explicitly, what developers need to do in that instance is what's actually going to be documented on the KB article. And I keep pointing at you as the product team, but I know that it was
Damian's
Tony.
Damian's been a busy guy. All of you have.
It's been Tony. We've been helping out on some of the pieces there as well, actually. It's been a cooperation. All this information that's going to go live is actually...
But is there sort of a high-level thing that you could address? Just like, I mean, since we're talking about this, I mean, yes, we can point people to the details, but what's the high level of how do you, in your world...
In my world... So, you know, I have a couple of thoughts which are actually move maybe a little bit away from this, but I think the compiler can be your best friend, and you should use the compiler as much as you possibly can. Now, you can use it in a couple of different ways. One issue we've seen recently, which we haven't really covered today, was an error that came up because someone was using a C-style cast.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you guys have seen this before, maybe from previous experience, but, you know, C-style casts are potentially very dangerous. You're telling the compiler, I know more about what's going on than you are, and so just let me do this, okay? Mm-hmm. The language has evolved, and the language now has things like static casting and dynamic casting and const casting, so that users can do the same thing, but the compiler gives you more protection, okay? Anytime I see people trying to circumnavigate the type system or take responsibility away from the compiler, I get very, very worried. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of these macros, if you look at it from a high enough level, are things like that. The macros just used to say, okay, something that implements iDispatch is fine. You know, now we're saying, well, something that implements iDispatch but is one of these particular class IDs is fine. So, again, you know, we're not using the compiler there per se, but we are using what I would say is a kind of type of, you know, static typing. Okay, it happens at runtime, but it's a maybe another level of dynamic typing to be even more explicit. So, you know, my usual meta advice on all of these things is let the compiler do the work. Let slash analyze the inbuilt static analyzer that ships with Visual Studio. Let it do the work. You know, use some of the tools that you see around, both from us and from external parties that check things like, you know, array bounds and things like that. These kinds of tools do probably more to stop the security issues than anything else, you know.
Absolutely.
I know. And there are... code reviews are great, you know, doing threat models are great, all these things are great, but, you know, compilers and the static analysis tools have this ability to be able to do these things over and over millions of times and get them right if you give them enough info. Anytime somebody's got to sit and reason about something, there's a potential for human error. There's also things only humans can do, so you can't just have, you know, compilers and static analysis.
Sure.
So I shouldn't be talking about this because now they were talking about my area. Right? Yeah, now
I'm totally
talking, but it'd be interesting to see if they agree with me or not on this one.
So I do agree. I actually put emphasis. There's not one single thing when you look at from an SDL perspective. There's not one single thing that we recommend more than the other ones. Yes, you have to do code reviews. You have to do threat models. You actually have to do static analysis. You have to do fuzzing. You have to actually educate people to how to actually they can write secure code. So there's no one single thing that you can go do. You have to do a variety of things to make sure that your component is secure. External people are getting more sophisticated and are actually taking exploits to the next level, and they're trying to attack vulnerabilities in different ways. So just because you have taken training potentially like 5 years ago and you think you're up to date, well, the reality is that might not be the case. So that's why staying up to date, understanding, being able to use the latest technologies, it's actually key. That will allow you to basically build components that are safe and you don't actually have to worry about it on issuing security updates, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's not, I should clarify, there is no... 100%
silver bullet,
right?
We need to come up with one of those, man.
Yeah. So, right. But as we keep learning, we're doing it. Keep raising the bar.
Absolutely. So, the call to action to developers.
So, this is the most important thing. This is the thing you really want to take out of this: is that there is an update to Visual Studio, which is addressing some issues with some COM components developed using the ATL. First thing you should do is download the update. The second thing you should do is follow the flow chart. Okay, look for where these are. There will be a large amount of information out there. There'll be information a little bit better structured than our conversation. There will be step-by-steps.
Correct.
Look for the things that Tony Goodhue are doing, Michael Howard are doing, other people are doing, okay? And just go through and check all of those. And as a personal note, I want to thank everybody who's been working on this internally fairly ferociously for the last couple of weeks to get it all done, coordinating. We're not the only people going out in this out of band, the coordination, the getting everything built. I mean, our build team, Jamshed and Tao, have been working equally as long as the actual product group to get all the things packaged and tested. I know the Moo and Woo teams have been testing, well, now can we detect the right implementations on the box and everything else. I mean, it's a small army working on this, and it's on one level been an interesting experience to go through it.
But absolutely.
That's just on one level.
Well, hey, thank you guys, man.
Sure,
we appreciate
thank you very
that.
Much.
Absolutely.
Let us know if you have any questions.
Yep. Yeah,
absolutely. Niners will, so watch those threads.
All sounds right. Good. Thank you.
And don't forget, Charles is going to put the links to all of these things up on the Channel 9 video, so please
absolutely.
Click on them and have a look.
Thank you. Take care, you guys.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.